cottage again. He smiled when he saw her trailing after Scotty as he trotted down the walkway, then the steps. At the beach, she bent over, releasing Scotty from the leash, and the dog took off running. There were no seagulls nearby, but he'd find them. Of that True had no doubt. As he watched, he wondered whether Hope was thinking about him, and hoped that she'd enjoyed their evening together as much as he had. She drew farther from the pier with every step, her image growing smaller. He watched her anyway, until he registered a light movement on his line. When he felt a tug, he jerked the tip of the rod upward, sinking the hook, and all at once, the pull on the line intensified. He lowered the tip and began winding the reel, keeping just enough tension on the line, and was struck again by how strong fish were, no matter their size. They were all muscle. But he played the game, knowing the fish would eventually tire. Continuing to work the reel, he watched as a strange-looking fish eventually emerged from the water at the end of his line. He swung it to the pier, having no idea what to make of it. It was flat and oval, with two eyes on its back. Using the toe of his boot to keep it from flapping, he plucked a glove and pair of pliers from the toolbox and began to remove the hook, trying not to damage the fish's mouth. As he was working, he heard a voice beside him. "That's a hell of a flounder. Big enough to keep, too." True glanced up and saw an older man with a baseball cap, wearing clothes that were several sizes too large. He had a gap where his front teeth should have been, and his accent, much heavier than Hope's, was difficult to understand. "Is that what it is? Don't tell me you ain't never seen a flounder before. This is a first." The man squinted at him. "Where are you from?" Wondering whether the man had ever heard of Zimbabwe, he simply said, "Africa." "Africa? You don't look like you're from Africa." By then, True had removed the hook, and setting the pliers aside, he grabbed the fish and was about to toss it over when he heard the man speak up.
"What you doing?"
"I was going to let go."
"Can I have it? I ain't had much luck yesterday or this morning. I'd sure appreciate some flounder for dinner."
True debated before shrugging.
"Sure."
The man reached over and took the fish, crossing back to the other side of the pier, where it vanished into a small cooler.
"Thank you,"
the man called out.
"You're welcome."
True readied his line again, casting out a second time. By then, Hope was nothing but a smudge in the distance. He recognized her anyway, and for a long time, he couldn't take his eyes off her.
Hope kept watch over Scotty, calling for the dog to come whenever he approached the dune. Not that he ever seemed to listen. Hoping that Scotty would suddenly begin to obey was an exercise in futility. Of course, it fit perfectly with how her morning was already going. Immediately after waking, she'd heard the phone begin to ring in the kitchen. Hope had to wrap the blanket around herself and stubbed her toe on the corner as she'd raced to answer it. She'd thought it might be Josh, but she remembered the time difference in the same instant she heard Ellen crying on the other end. Sobbing, actually. At first, Hope had no idea what Ellen was trying to tell her. It was all Ellen could do to choke out a few words here and there. Hope initially believed that the wedding had been called off, and it took a while for her to decipher that Ellen was crying about the weather. Between sobs, Ellen informed Hope that it was supposed to start raining later today, and that storms were virtually certain over the weekend. It struck Hope as a bit of an overreaction, but Ellen remained inconsolable no matter what she told her. Not that Hope had the chance to do much talking. The phone call was more like listening to a weepy 40-minute monologue about the unfairness of life. As her friend went on and on, Hope leaned against the counter with her legs crossed and toe still throbbing, absently wondering if Ellen would even notice if she set the phone down to use the bathroom. She really, really had to pee, and by the time she was finally able to get Ellen off the phone, she had to ditch the blanket and hobble as fast as she could. After that, as though some deity had it out for both True and Hope, her coffee maker went on the blink. The light came on, but the water wouldn't heat, and Hope debated whether to boil some water and pour it through the grounds. By then, however, Scotty was at the door, and she knew that if she didn't get him outside soon, she would have a mess to clean up. So, throwing on some clothes, she brought her dog to the beach, hoping to salvage the morning with a relaxing walk. But Scotty made that impossible. On two different occasions, he ran to the top of the dune and up someone's walkway, either trying to find that cat again or purposely attempting to give her a heart attack, and she had to scramble after him. She supposed she could put the leash back on, but Scotty would likely alternate between trying to pull her arm off and sulking, and she wasn't in the mood for either. Despite all that, while on the phone, she'd seen True walk past her house on the way to the pier with his fishing gear and couldn't help smiling. She still had trouble believing she'd actually had dinner with him. Her thoughts drifted back to their conversation. She was surprised by how pleasant the evening had been and how effortlessly they'd seemed to get along. She wondered whether he'd take her advice and visit Kindred Spirit after he finished fishing. With storms on the way, tomorrow would probably be too late. But that went for her as well. After her appointments, she guessed she might have some extra time to swing by the mailbox, and as she walked the beach, she made the decision to do just that. But she had to get going or she'd be late. She had a hair appointment in Wilmington at 9 and a pedicure at 11. She also wanted to see if she could find an appropriate pair of shoes to wear to the wedding. The burgundy pumps that Ellen had picked out for the bridesmaids pinched her feet terribly, and she decided she couldn't spend the whole night in agony. Traffic would probably be heavy, and cutting the walk short, she called to Scotty before turning around. Not long after, Scotty barreled past her with his tongue hanging out. As she watched him run, she glanced toward the pier. She could see a cluster of people, but they were nothing but shadows, and she wondered whether True was having any luck. Back at the cottage, she dried Scotty with a towel, then took a quick shower. Afterward, she dressed in jeans, a blouse, and sandals. She'd worn pretty much the same outfit the day before, but when she glanced in the mirror, she couldn't help feeling that she looked different. Prettier, maybe, or even more desirable. And she understood that she was seeing herself as a stranger might see her, the way True had seen her last night, as they'd sat across the table from each other. With that realization came another decision. Hope rummaged through the drawer beneath the phone, finding everything she needed. After scribbling the note, she left through the back door and descended to the beach. Taking the steps and using the walkway at the house next door, she tacked the note next to the latch of the gate, where True couldn't help but find it. She returned the way she'd come and grabbed her handbag as she headed out the door. As she got in her car, she let out a deep breath, wondering what was going to happen next.
True wasn't sure what Hope had done. He'd seen her emerge onto the back deck, maybe 40 minutes after she'd returned from a walk with Scotty, and then make her way to the house where he was staying. He felt a pang of disappointment at the thought that she'd gone to see him when he wasn't there, but at the gate she'd stopped. He supposed she might have been debating whether or not to proceed to the back door, but she was only there for a few seconds before she retraced her steps and vanished inside her parents' cottage. He hadn't seen her since. Strange. His thoughts remained on her. It would have been easy to chalk his feelings up to infatuation, maybe desperation. Kim, no doubt, would agree with that. Since the divorce, his ex would occasionally ask him whether he'd met anyone. When he would reply that he hadn't, she'd jokingly suggest that he was so out of practice that he'd probably end up falling head over heels in love with the first woman who so much as glanced at him. That wasn't what was going on here. He wasn't infatuated with Hope, nor was he desperate, but he admitted to himself that he found her arresting. Ironically, it had something to do with Kim. Early on, he'd realized that Kim knew exactly how attractive she was, and that she'd spent a lifetime learning to use it to her advantage. Hope seemed to be the opposite, even though she was equally beautiful, and it spoke to him in the same intuitive way as when he finished her drawing and thought, that's exactly the way it should be. He knew that it wasn't appropriate to think such things, if only because nothing good could come of it. Not only was he leaving on Monday, but Hope would return to her life on Sunday, a life that included the man she thought she'd marry, even if they were having difficulties at present. Nor, with their respective weekends on tap, was he sure he'd even see Hope again. Feeling another tug on the line, he played the game, timed it right, and set the hook. After a struggle that surprised him, he ended up pulling in a fish different from the flounder, but one he still didn't recognize. The older man in the ball cap wandered back toward him, watching as True began to remove the hook.
"That's a hell of a whiting," the man said.
"Whiting?"
"English whiting. Sea mullet. Big enough to keep too. Sure would be nice to cook it up. If you were planning to throw it back, I mean."
True handed over the fish, watching as it vanished into the cooler again. He didn't have much luck the rest of the morning, but by then it was time to call Andrew. He packed up his things, walked to the shop, and got some change, then went to the payphone. It took half a minute and a lot of coins to get through to an international operator, but eventually he heard the familiar ring as the call was placed. When Kim answered, she agreed to accept the charges, and Andrew came on the line. His son had all sorts of questions about America, most of which had to do with various movies he'd seen. He seemed disappointed to learn that they weren't endless shootouts on the streets, people in cowboy hats, or movie stars in every corner. After that, the conversation settled into something more normal, and True listened as Andrew caught him up on what he'd been doing in the past few days. The sound of his voice made True ache at the thought that the two of them were half a world apart. For his part, True told Andrew about the beach and described the two fish he'd caught. He also told him about Scotty and how True had gone to help him. They spoke longer than True had anticipated, nearly 20 minutes, before True heard Kim reminding Andrew that he still had homework to do. She popped on the line after Andrew. "He misses you," she said.
"I know. I miss him too."
"Have you seen your father yet?"
"No," he answered.
He told her about the meeting planned for Saturday afternoon. When he finished, Kim cleared her throat. "What was that I heard about a dog?"
"It was hit by a car." "It wasn't that serious," True said before repeating the story. He made the mistake of mentioning Hope by name, and Kim immediately latched onto that.
"Hope?"
"Yes."
"A woman?"
"Obviously."
"I'm assuming that you two hit it off."
"Why would you assume that?"
"Because you know her name, which means that the two of you spent some time in conversation, which is something you never do anymore. Tell me about her."
"There's not much to tell."
"Did the two of you go out?"
"Why is that important?"
Instead of answering, Kim laughed. "I can't believe it. You finally met a woman, and in America of all places. Has she ever been to Zimbabwe?"
"No."
"I want to hear all about her. In exchange, I won't ask you to reimburse me for the call." Kim stayed on the line for 10 minutes, and though True did his best to downplay his feelings about Hope, he could almost hear Kim smiling on the other end. By the time he hung up, he was disconcerted by the call, and he took his time on the walk back up the beach. Beneath the belt of clouds that were turning the color of lead, he wondered how Kim could have deduced as much as she had so quickly. Even if he had accepted the idea that she knew him better than almost anyone, it struck him as uncanny. Women were indeed the mysterious sex. A short while later, as he mounted the steps to the back deck, he was startled by the sight of a piece of white paper tacked near the latch. Realizing that Hope must have left it for him, and that was the reason she'd come by, he removed the tack and read the note. "Hi there. I'm heading out to Kindred Spirit today. If you'd like to join me, meet me at the beach at 3. He raised an eyebrow. Definitely the mysterious sex. Inside the house, he found a pen and wrote a response. Remembering that she'd said she had some appointments, he left through the front door, walked to her place, and tucked the note into the door jamb next to the knob of her front door. Her car, he noticed, wasn't in the drive. Back at the house, he did a workout and then had a bite to eat. As he sat at the table, he gazed out the window at a sky that was slowly growing more ominous, hoping that the rain would hold off, at least until the evening.
Ellen had recommended not only the salon in Wilmington, but the stylist Claire as well. As Hope took a seat, she eyed the reflection of a woman with multiple piercings in her ears, a black studded dog collar, and black hair with purple streaks. She wore tight black pants and a black sleeveless top, completing the ensemble. Silently, Hope wondered what Ellen had been thinking. It turned out that Claire had worked in Raleigh before moving to Wilmington earlier this year, and Ellen had been a loyal customer. Hope still wasn't sure, but saying a little prayer to herself, she settled back in the chair. After asking her questions about the length and style she was interested in, Claire kept up a steady stream of chatter. When Hope gasped at the sight of nearly 3 inches of hair being lopped off, Claire promised that Hope would be thrilled before going on with whatever she'd been talking about in the first place. Hope was nervous throughout the transformation, but after the highlights, blow dry, and style, she had to admit that Claire had talent. Hope's naturally auburn hair now carried some lighter tints, as though she'd spent most of the summer in the sun, and the cut itself seemed to frame her face in a way that Hope had never envisioned possible. She left Claire an extra generous tip on the way out, and crossed the street to the nail salon, opening the door just as her appointment was set to begin. The nail technician, a middle-aged Vietnamese woman, spoke little English, so Claire pointed out a burgundy rose color that would match the bridesmaid dress and read a magazine while her toes were being done. Afterward, Hope swung by Walmart to pick up a new coffee maker. She chose the least expensive model. It seemed pointless, since they were selling the cottage, but a cup of coffee was part of Hope's morning routine, and she figured she'd just wrap it up on Saturday to give to Ellen as a wedding gift, with a note saying it was slightly used. Just kidding. But the thought made her giggle. She then spent some time scouting the nearby shops and was thrilled to find a pair of comfortable strappy heels that matched her bridesmaid dress. Though they were a bit expensive, she felt lucky to find a suitable pair given her last-minute efforts. She also splurged on some beaded white sandals to replace the scuffed-up ones she was wearing. Popping into the clothing boutique next door, she browsed the racks. A little retail therapy never hurt anyone, after all, and she ended up purchasing a flower-patterned sundress that happened to be on sale. There was a small scoop in the front, a cinch at the waist, and the hemline reached just above her knees. It wasn't the kind of dress she usually bought. To be honest, she seldom, if ever, bought dresses. But it was fun and feminine, and she couldn't say no, even if she had no idea where or when she'd ever wear it. The return trip was easier, with less traffic and a series of lucky breaks when it came to hitting green lights. On the highway, she passed through low country farmland before eventually reaching the turnoff to Sunset Beach. A few minutes later, she pulled into the drive. Gathering her purchases, she climbed the steps to the front door and saw a scrap of paper near the doorknob. Pulling it free, she recognized it as the note she'd written to True earlier. Her first thought was that he'd simply returned it to her without comment, which confused her, and it wasn't until she flipped it over that she realized he'd written something in response. "I'll be on the beach at 3. I look forward to warm conversation and learning the mystery surrounding kindred spirit. I'm anticipating surprise with you as my guide." She blinked, thinking that the man knew how to write a note. The wording struck her as vaguely romantic, which only deepened the flush she experienced at the thought that he'd actually agreed to join her. When she opened the door, Scotty circled her legs, his tail wagging. She grabbed the old coffee maker and tossed it in the outdoor garbage can while Scotty did his business, then set up the new machine in its place. She put the other bags in the bedroom and, noting the time, saw that she had an hour to get ready. With her hair already done, That simply entailed grabbing a light jacket from her suitcase and setting it within easy reach until she was ready to go. Which meant she had nothing else to do other than to alternate between trying to relax on the couch and rising regularly to check her appearance in the mirror, fully conscious of how slowly time seemed to be moving.
A love letter. At 3:10, Tru left the house and proceeded down the walkway toward the beach, noting that the temperature had cooled markedly since the morning. The sky was gray and a steady breeze was churning up the ocean. Foam blew down the beach, rolling like tumbleweeds in the westerns he'd sometimes watched on television as a child. He heard Hope before he saw her. She was shouting at Scotty not to pull so hard. As she descended to the beach, he noticed that she donned a light jacket, and her auburn hair not only was shorter, but seemed to glint in places. He watched as Scotty dragged her toward him. "Hey there," she said when close. "How was your day?" "Quiet," Tru answered, thinking her normally turquoise eyes now reflected the gray of the sky, lending an almost ethereal quality. "I went fishing earlier."
"I know. I saw you going that way this morning. Any luck?"
"A bit," he said. "How about you? Did you accomplish all you'd hoped?"
"I did, but I feel like I've been rushing around ever since I woke up.
Your hair is lovely, by the way."
"Thank you." She cut more than I thought she would, but I'm glad you still recognize me.
She zipped her jacket before bending over to release Scotty from the leash. "Do you think you'll need a coat? It's kind of chilly out here, and we'll be walking for a while."
"I'll be all right."
"It must be all that Zimbabwean blood coursing through your veins." As soon as Scotty was free, he took off running, sand flying from his feet. The two of them began to follow. "I know you probably think he's out of control," she said, "but I've taken him to obedience classes. He's too stubborn to learn."
"I'll take your word for it."
"You don't believe me?"
"Why wouldn't I?"
"I'm not sure. I'm thinking that maybe you figure I'm just a pushover when it comes to my dog."
"I'm not sure there's a safe way for me to respond to that comment."
She laughed.
"Probably not. Did you get a chance to speak with Andrew?"
"I did, but I'm fairly certain that I miss him more than he misses me."
"I think that's typical for kids, isn't it? Whenever I went off to camp, I was having too much fun to even have time to think about my parents."
"Good to know," he said. He glanced over at her. "Did you ever think about having children?"
"All the time," she admitted. "I can't imagine not having children."
"Yeah?
I guess I'm just into the whole marriage and family thing. I mean, I enjoy my job, but that's not what life is about for me. I can remember when my sister had her first baby, and she let me hold her, and I just melted. Like I knew my purpose in life. But then again, I've always felt that way." Her eyes glowed. "When I was a little girl, I used to walk around with a sofa cushion stuffed under my shirt, pretending I was pregnant." She laughed at the memory. "I've always pictured myself as a mother. Somehow the idea of growing a person within you, bringing it into the world and loving it with a kind of primal intensity feels profound to me. I don't get to church that often anymore, but my feelings about this are as close to spiritual as I get, I suppose." He watched as she tucked a strand of hair behind her ear, as though trying to push away a painful truth, her vulnerability making him long to put his arms around her. "But then, things don't always work out the way we imagine they will, do they?" The question was rhetorical, so he didn't answer. After a few steps, Hope went on. "I know that life isn't fair, and I've heard that old saying about how man plans and God laughs, but I never expected to be single at my age. It's like my life is on hold somehow. It seemed like everything was on track. I'd met this wonderful man, we were making plans, and then nothing. We're exactly where we were 6 years ago. We don't live together, we're not married or even engaged. We're just dating." She shook her head. I'm sorry. You probably have no interest in hearing about any of this.
That's not true. Why would you care?
Because I care about you, he thought. Instead, he said, because sometimes all a person needs is for someone else to listen. She seemed to contemplate that as they walked through the sand. Scotty was far ahead, already past the pier, chasing one flock of birds after another, as energetic as always.
I probably shouldn't have said anything, she remarked with a defeated shrug. I'm just disappointed in Josh right now, and it makes me wonder what the future holds for us, or even if there's going to be a future. But that's just my anger talking. If you'd asked me when things were good between us, I'd have gone on and on about how wonderful he is.
When she trailed off, Tru glanced over at her. Do you know if he wants to be married? Or have kids?
That's the thing. He says he does. Or he used to, anyway. We haven't talked about it much recently. And when I finally tried to bring it up again, the discussion went south real fast. That's why he's not here. Because we ended up in this huge argument. And now, instead of coming to the wedding with me, he's in Las Vegas with his buddies.
Tru winced. Even in Zimbabwe, people knew about Las Vegas. Meanwhile, Hope continued. I don't know. Maybe it's me. I probably could have handled it better. And I know I'm making him sound completely selfish. But he isn't. It's just sometimes I think he hasn't finished growing up yet.
How old is he?
Almost 40. How old are you, by the way?
42.
When did you finally feel like an adult?
When I was 18 and left the farm.
That doesn't come as a shock. With all you went through, you had no choice but to grow up.
By then they reached the pier, and Tru noticed that many of the pilings were no longer submerged. Low tide, just as she had told him.
What do you intend to do? He asked.
I don't know, she said. Right now, I'm guessing that in the end, we'll get back together and try to pick up from where we left off.
Is that what you want?
I love him, she conceded. And he loves me. I know he's being a bit of a jerk right now, but most of the time he's really great.
Though he'd expected the words, there was a part of him that wished she hadn't said them.
Of that I have no doubt.
Why would you say that?
Because, he responded, you've chosen to stay with him for 6 years. And from what I know about you, you would never have done so, unless he had numerous admirable traits.
She stopped to pick up a colorful seashell, but it turned out to be broken. I like the way you phrase things. You often sound very British. I've never heard anyone described as having numerous admirable traits.
That's a pity.
She tossed the shell aside and laughed. You want to know what I think?
What's that?
I think Kim might have made a mistake by letting you go.
That's kind of you to say. But she didn't. I'm not sure I was ever cut out to be a husband.
Does that mean you'll never get married again?
I haven't given the matter any thought. Between work and spending time with Andrew, meeting someone is rather low on my list of priorities.
What are the women like in Zimbabwe?
In my ward, you mean? Single women?
Sure.
Few and far between. Most of the women I meet are already married, and they're at the lodge with their husbands.
Maybe you should move to another country.
Zimbabwe is my home. And Andrew is there. I could never leave him.
No, she said. You can't.
How about you? Have you ever considered moving from the United States?
Never, she said. And it's certainly not possible now, since my dad is sick. But even in the future, I'm not sure that I could. My family's here, my friends are here. But I do hope to make it to Africa one day, and go on safari.
If you do, keep your guard up around the guides. Some of them can be extremely charming.
Yeah, I know.
She playfully nudged his shoulder with hers.
Are you ready for Kindred Spirit? I still don't know what it is. It's a mailbox on the beach, she said. To whom does the mailbox belong? She shrugged. To anyone, I guess. And everyone. Am I supposed to write a letter? If you'd like, she said. The first time I went, I did. When was that? She considered the question. Maybe 5 years ago? I assumed you'd been going there since you were young. It hasn't been around that long. I think my dad told me that it went up in 1983, but I could be wrong about that. I've only been there a few times, including the day after Christmas last year, which was kind of crazy. Why? Because it snowed 15 inches. It's the only time I've ever seen snow on the beach. When we returned home, we built a snowman near the steps. I think there's a photo of it in the cottage somewhere. I've never seen snow. Ever? It doesn't snow in Zimbabwe. And I've only been to Europe in the summers. It rarely snows in Raleigh, but my parents used to bring us skiing at Snowshoe in West Virginia during the winter. Are you any good? I'm all right. I never like to go too fast. I'm not a risk-taker. I just want to have fun. Up ahead, he saw clouds flickering on the distant horizon. Is that lightning? Probably. Does that mean we should turn back? It's out to sea, she said. The storm will be coming from the northwest. Are you sure? Pretty sure, she said. I'm willing to risk it if you are. All right, then, he said with a nod, and they continued on, the pier growing ever smaller behind them. Sunset Beach eventually came to an end, with Bird Island directly ahead. They had to skirt the dune to keep their feet from getting wet, and True found his thoughts drifting back to the way she'd playfully bumped against him. It seemed as though he could still feel the sensation, a tingling up and down his arm. It's a mailbox, True said. They'd reached Kindred Spirit, and Hope watched as True simply stared at it. I already told you that. I thought it might be a metaphor. Nope, she said. It's real. Who takes care of it? I have no idea. My dad could probably tell you, but I assume it's a local. Come on. As she walked toward the mailbox, she glanced at True, noting again the small dimple in his chin and his wind-blown hair. Over his shoulder, she saw Scotty sniffing near the dune, his tongue hanging out, tired from the endless quest to keep birds in the air. You'll probably take this idea back with you to Zimbabwe, and you'll put up a mailbox in the middle of the bush. How neat would that be? He shook his head. The termites would eat the post in less than a month. Besides, it's not as though anyone could put a letter in it, or sit around reading it. Too dangerous. Do you ever go out into the bush alone? Only if I'm armed. And only when I can predict that I'll be safe, because I know what animals are in the vicinity. What are the most dangerous animals? That depends on the time and the location and the mood of the animal, he answered. Generally, if you're in or around the water, crocodiles and hippos. In the bush during daylight, elephants, especially if they're in heat. In the bush at night, lions. And black mambas anytime. That's a snake, very poisonous. The bite is nearly always fatal. We have water moccasins in North Carolina. Copperheads, too. A kid came into the emergency room once after being bitten. But we had anti-venom at the hospital, and he recovered. And how did we get on this subject again? You suggested that I put a mailbox in the middle of the bush. Oh, yeah, she said. By then, she had her hand on the handle. Are you ready for this? Is there a protocol? Of course there is, she said. First, you do 10 jumping jacks, then sing Auld Lang Syne, and you're supposed to bring red velvet cake as an offering, which you place on the bench. When he stared at her, she giggled. Gotcha. No, there's no protocol. You just read what's in the mailbox. And if you want to, you can write something.
Hope pulled it open and removed the entire stack of mail that rested inside, bringing it with her to the bench. When she set it beside her, True took a seat next to her, close enough that she could feel the heat from his body. How about I read first, and then just pass them to you?
I'll follow your lead, he answered. Proceed.
She rolled her eyes. Proceed, she repeated. It's fine if you just say okay, you know.
Okay.
I hope there's a good one. I've read some amazing letters when I've been here.
Tell me about the one you remember most.
She took a few seconds to consider it. I read about this man who was searching for a woman he'd met briefly at a restaurant. They were at the bar, and they spoke for a few minutes before her friends arrived, and she went to her table. But he knew she was the one for him. There was this beautiful line in there about stars colliding, sending shimmers of light through his soul. And anyway, this guy was writing because he hoped that someone knew who she was and would let her know that he wanted to see her again. He even left his name and phone number.
He'd barely spoken to her. He sounds obsessive.
You had to read the way he wrote it, she said. It was very romantic. Sometimes a person just knows. He watched as she lifted a postcard from the top of the stack, one displaying the USS North Carolina, a World War II battleship. When she was finished reading it, she handed it to him without comment. True scanned it before turning toward her.
It's a shopping list for someone planning a barbecue.
I know.
I'm not sure why I'd be interested in this.
You don't have to be, she said. That's why this is exciting. Because we're hoping to find that diamond in the rough, and who knows? She said, lifting a letter from the stack. Maybe this is it. True set the postcard aside, and when she was finished with the letter, she handed it to him. It was from a young girl, a poem about her parents, and it reminded him of something Andrew might have written when he was younger. As he read, he felt Hope's leg move against his, and by the time he finished, Hope was handing him a sheaf of pages torn from a notebook. He wondered if she realized that they were touching, or if she was simply lost in the words of anonymous writers and didn't even notice. Now and then, he saw her glance up to make sure that Scotty was still nearby. Because there were no birds, he'd plopped himself down a bit closer to the water's edge. There was another postcard, and a handful of photographs with comments on the back. That was followed by a letter from a father to his children, with whom he seldom spoke. In the letter, there was more bitterness and blame than sadness about the broken relationship. True wondered whether the man took any responsibility for what had happened. As he set it aside, Hope was still reading the next letter in the stack. In the silence, he spotted a pelican skimming low over the water, just past the breakers. Beyond them, the sea continued to darken, becoming almost black near the horizon. Broken seashells littered the smooth, hard sand, left behind by the receding tide. Hope's hair was lifting slightly in the breeze. In the graying light, she seemed to be the only element of color. She had yet to hand him another letter, and only then did he realize that she was reading the one in her hand a second time. He heard her sniff. Wow, she finally said.
Did he write about stars colliding and sending shimmers of light through his soul?
No. And on second thought, you're probably right. That other guy was definitely obsessive. He laughed as she handed over the letter. She didn't reach for another one, instead keeping her gaze on him.
You're not going to watch me read it, are you? He asked.
I have a better idea, she said. Why don't you read it aloud? The suggestion caught him off guard, but he took the letter, feeling her hand brush against his. He thought how relaxed they already seemed to be with each other, and how easy it would be to fall for someone like her. And that maybe, just maybe, he was already falling, and there was nothing he could do to stop it. In the silence, he felt her move closer. He could smell her hair, the scent clean and sweet, as fresh as flowers, and he fought the urge to put his arm around her. Instead,
He took a deep breath and, lowering his gaze, began to read the shaky scrawl. Dear Lena, the sands and the hourglass have fallen without mercy throughout my life, but I try to remind myself of the blessed years that we shared, especially now, when I am drowning in riptides of sorrow and loss. I wonder who I am without you. Even when I was old and tired, it was you who helped me face the day. I sometimes felt as though you could read my mind. You seemed to always know what I wanted and needed. Even though we had our struggles at times, I can think back on the more than half a century we spent together and know that I was the lucky one. You inspired and fascinated me, and I walked just a bit taller because you were by my side. Every time I held you, I felt as though I needed nothing else. I would trade anything to hold you just one more time. I want to smell your hair and sit at the dinner table with you. I want to watch as you cook the fried chicken that always made my mouth water, the meal the doctor warned me against eating. I want to see you slip your arms into the blue sweater I bought you for your birthday, the one you usually wore in the evenings when you settled beside me in the den. I want to sit with our children and grandchildren, and Emma, our one and only great-grandchild. How can I be this old? I think when I hug her, but when I listen for you to tease me about it, I never hear your voice, and it always breaks my heart. I'm not good at this, spending my days alone. I miss your knowing smile, and I miss the sound of your voice. Sometimes I imagine that I can still hear you calling to me from the garden, but when I go to the window, they are nothing but cardinals, the ones you made me hang the bird feeder for. I keep it filled for you. I know you'd want me to do that. You always enjoyed watching those birds. I never understood why, until the man at the pet store mentioned that cardinals mate for life. I don't know if that's true, but I want to believe it. And as I watch them just as you used to, I think to myself that you have always been my cardinal, and I have always been yours. I miss you so much. Happy anniversary, Joe. When he finished, Drew continued to stare at the page, more affected by the words than he wanted to admit. He knew that Hope was watching him, and when he turned toward her, he was struck by the open, unguarded nature of her beauty. That letter, she said quietly, is the reason I like to come to Kindred Spirit. Folding the page, he put it back in the envelope and set it atop the small stack beside him. Even as he watched her reach toward the unread pile, he had the feeling that the remaining messages would be anticlimactic, and they were. Most were heartfelt and earnest, but there was nothing that struck a chord in the same way Joe's letter had. Even as they rose from the bench and refilled the mailbox, he wondered about the man, where he lived, what he was doing, and considering his obvious age, how he had been able to make his way to this isolated stretch of beach on a mostly inaccessible island. They started back toward the house, sometimes making idle conversation, but mainly content to remain silent as they walked. Their ease made True think about Joe and Lena again, a relationship rooted in comfort and trust, and a lasting desire to be together. He wondered whether Hope was thinking the same thing. Up ahead, Scotty was zigzagging from the dunes to the water's edge and back again. The clouds continued to darken, shape-shifting in the wind, and a few minutes later, it started to sprinkle. The tide had come in, and they had to step onto the dune to keep the waves from washing over them, but True quickly realized that it was pointless to attempt to stay dry. There were two flashes of lightning followed by two booms of thunder, and the world suddenly dimmed. The sprinkle turned to rain, and then became a downpour. Hope squealed and started to run, but with the pier still in the distance, she eventually slowed to a walk again. Turning around, she held up her hands.
"I guess I was wrong about how much time we had, huh?" she called out. "Sorry."
"Not a worry," he answered, walking toward her. "It's wet, but not terribly cold."
"Not just wet," she said. soaking wet. And it's been an adventure, right?
In the downpour, he saw a smudge of mascara on her cheek, a hint of imperfection on a woman who otherwise struck him as nearly perfect in every way. He wondered why she'd come into his life, and how he could have come to care for her as deeply as he already did. All his thoughts revolved around her. He didn't reflect on his life in Zimbabwe, or the reason he'd come to North Carolina. Instead, he marveled at her beauty, and replayed the time they'd spent together, a reel of vivid images. It was a tidal wave of sensation and emotion, and he suddenly felt that every step he'd taken in his life had been on a path leading to her, as if she were the ultimate destination. Hope seemed frozen in place. He guessed she knew what he was feeling, and he wondered whether she felt the same. He couldn't tell, but she didn't move, even when he reached out, finally placing a hand on her hip. For a long time they stood that way, the energy passing back and forth between them, through that single, simple touch. He stared at her, and she stared back, the moment seeming to last forever, before he finally inched forward. He tilted his head, his face slowly drawing toward hers, before feeling Hope place a gentle hand on his chest.
"True," she whispered.
Her voice was enough to stop him from going further. He knew he should step back, make space between them, but he felt powerless to move. Nor did she step back. Instead, they faced each other in the downpour, and True felt the old instincts rising up, instincts he couldn't control. With sudden clarity, he understood that he'd fallen in love, and perhaps even that he'd been waiting for someone just like her all his life.
Hope stared at True, her mind racing, trying to ignore the gentle strength she felt in his hand, trying to ignore the desire and longing she sensed in his touch. Part of her knew she wanted him to kiss her, even as another part, the stronger part, warned her against it, causing her to put a hand between them. She wasn't ready for this. Finally, reluctantly, she averted her gaze, sensing both his disappointment and his acceptance. When at long last he stepped back, she finally felt like she could breathe again, even though his hand remained on her hip. "We should probably be getting back," she murmured. He nodded, and as he slid his hand from her hip, she reached for it, intending to give it a squeeze. He happened to rotate his hand at the same time, and their fingers interlocked as if choreographed. The next thing she knew, they were holding hands as they walked side by side. The sensation was heady, even though she knew holding hands meant nothing in the grand scheme of things. She vaguely remembered doing the same thing with Tony, the boy she'd kissed at the cottage when they'd gone to the movies the following day. Back then, that simple gesture had probably impressed her as a sign of maturity, as if she were finally growing up. But here and now, it struck her as one of the most intimate things that had ever happened to her. His touch carried with it the possibility of even greater intimacy later, and she focused on keeping Scotty in sight to avoid thinking too deeply about it. Eventually, they passed Clancy's, and then the pier. Not too long after that, they'd reached the steps of the cottage. It was only when she stopped that True let go of her hand. As she stared at him, she knew she wasn't yet ready to end their time together. "Would you like to have dinner tonight? At the cottage? I picked up some fresh fish the other day at the market."
"Yes," he said. "Very much."
Moments of Truth. As soon as she opened the door to her cottage, Scotty raced inside, paused, then shook himself vigorously, sending a fine spray of water over everything in the vicinity. Hope rushed to get a towel, but Scotty shook again before she could reach him. She grimaced. After she was dry, she would have to wipe down the furniture and walls. But first, a bath. They had arranged to meet in an hour and a half, so there was plenty of time. She started the water in the tub, peeled out of her wet clothing, and tossed it into the dryer. By the time she returned, the tub was half full, and she added some bubbles, Realizing something was missing, she wrapped a towel around herself, went to the kitchen, and poured a glass of wine from the bottle she'd opened the day before. On her way back to the bathroom, she grabbed candles and a book of matches from the cabinet. She lit the candles before slipping into the hot, soapy water and took a long sip of wine. Leaning her head back, she thought the experience seemed different than it had the day before, more luxurious somehow. As she relaxed, she replayed that moment on the beach when True had almost kissed her. Even though she had ultimately stopped him, there'd been a dreamlike quality to all of it, and she wanted to relive it. It wasn't just about feeling attractive again. There was something graceful and unforced about her connection with True, something almost peaceful. Until meeting him, she'd had no idea how much she'd been craving something exactly like that. What she didn't know was whether that feeling was new or had been buried in her subconscious all along, lost among her worries and frustrations and the anger she felt at Josh. All she knew for sure was that the emotional turbulence of the last few months had left her with little energy to take care of herself. Periods of peace or simple relaxation were rare these days. Sadly, she realized that she wasn't even excited about seeing her friends this weekend. Somewhere along the way, she'd lost her spark. Spending time with True had awakened her to the fact that she didn't want to be the person she'd recently become. She wanted to be the person she remembered herself to be, someone who embraced life, an enthusiast for both the ordinary and extraordinary, not in the future, but starting now. She shaved her legs and soaked a little while longer before the water finally began to cool. After toweling off, she reached for the lotion on the counter. She spread it over her legs and breasts and belly, relishing the silky feeling as her skin came to life. Pulling out the new sundress, she slipped it on, along with her new sandals. She thought about putting on a bra, but decided it wasn't necessary. Feeling scandalous, but not wanting to think about what it might mean for later, she didn't reach for a pair of panties either. She dried and styled her hair, trying to remember exactly how Claire had done it. When she was satisfied, she started with her makeup. For eyeshadow, she selected a dusting of aqua, hoping it would accent the color of her eyes. She dabbed on a bit of perfume and chose a pair of crystal drop earrings that Robin had given her for her birthday. Afterward, she stood in front of the mirror. She adjusted the straps of her sundress and primped her hair until she was satisfied. There were times when she was somewhat critical about her appearance, but tonight she couldn't help but be pleased with the way she looked. She carried what was left of her glass of wine back to the kitchen. Beyond the windows, the world continued to darken. Instead of starting the dinner preparations, she mopped up the remainder of Scotty's mess in the entranceway and did a quick run-through of the family room, straightening up the pillows and putting the novels she'd been reading back on the shelf. She switched on some lamps in the living room, using the dimmer to get the ambiance right. She turned on the radio and adjusted the tuner until she found a station offering classic jazz. Perfect. In the kitchen, she opened another bottle of wine, but put it in the refrigerator to cool. Then pulling out some yellow squash, zucchini, and onions, she brought them to the counter and diced them before setting them aside. The salad came next. Tomatoes, cucumbers, carrots, and romaine lettuce, which she'd just finished tossing in a wooden bowl when she heard a knock at the front door. The sound kicked up butterflies in her stomach. "Come in," she called out as she moved to the sink. "It's open." The sound of rain suddenly intensified as the door opened, then quickly receded again. "Give me just a minute, would you?"
"Take your time,"
his voice echoed in the hallway. She rinsed and dried her hands, then retrieved the wine. As she poured it into glasses, it occurred to her that she should probably set out snacks. There wasn't much in the cabinet, but in the refrigerator she found some Kalamata olives. Good enough. She dumped a handful into a small ceramic bowl and placed it on the dining room table. Then, after turning on the light above the stove, she turned off the overhead light and picked up the glasses. She took a deep breath before heading around the corner to the family room. He'd squatted low to show some affection to Scotty, his back to her. He was dressed in a long-sleeved blue shirt, and she noted the way his jeans stretched tight around his thighs and his butt. She stopped in mid-stride, and all she could do was stare. It was just about the sexiest thing she'd ever seen. He must have heard her, because he finally stood and turned with an automatic smile before registering the sight of her. His eyes widened as he absorbed the way she looked, his mouth slightly ajar. He seemed immobilized, struggling and failing to find his voice.
"You're indescribably beautiful," he finally whispered. "Truly."
He was in love with her, she realized with sudden force. Despite herself, she basked in the sensation, somehow certain that the two of them had been moving toward this moment all along. More than that, she knew now that she'd wanted this to happen, because she understood that she was undeniably in love with him, too. When True finally lowered his gaze, Hope moved to his side and handed him a glass of wine.
"Thank you," he said, taking in her appearance again. "I would have worn a jacket if I'd known. And if I'd packed one."
"You look perfect," she said, knowing that she wouldn't have wanted him dressed any other way. "It's a different wine from last night. I hope it's okay."
"I'm not particular," he said. "I'm sure it's fine."
"I haven't started cooking yet. I wasn't sure if you were ready to eat."
"It's up to you."
"I put out some olives if you want to nibble on something."
"All right."
"They're on the dining room table." She knew they were skirting the edge of things, but with her emotions in upheaval, it was all she could do not to spill her wine. With a deep breath, she started toward the dining area. Beyond the window, the horizon flickered as though hiding a strobe light in its depths. She pulled out a chair and took a seat. True did the same, both of them facing the window. Her throat felt dry and she took a sip of wine, thinking that their actions were unconsciously mirroring each other's. When True lowered his glass to the table, the fingers of both his hands remained on the stem. She knew he was as nervous as she was, which she found strangely comforting.
"I'm glad you came with me today."
"Me too," he said.
"I'm glad you're here."
"Where else would I be?"
The phone rang. The receiver was on the wall near True, but for a few beats, they just continued to watch each other. Only when it rang a second time did Hope turn toward the sound. Part of her was inclined to let the answering machine get it, but then she thought of her parents. Rising, she stepped past True and lifted the receiver.
"Hey there," Josh said. "It's me."
Her stomach tightened. She had no desire to talk to him. Not with True here, not now.
"Hi,"
she said tightly.
"I wasn't sure I'd catch you. I thought you might be out somewhere."
She heard him slur his words and realized he'd been drinking.
"I'm here. I just came in from the pool for a few minutes. It's pretty hot out there. How are you?"
True sat unmoving and silent at the table. He was so near. Noting the way his shirt hugged his body, she sensed the muscles beneath the fabric, remembering the feel of his hand on her hip.
"I'm fine," she said, trying to sound nonchalant. "You?" "I'm doing great," he said. "I won some money last night playing blackjack."
"Good for you."
"How's the cottage? Good weather at the beach?"
"It's raining right now, and it's supposed to last through the weekend."
"I'll bet Ellen's upset, huh?"
"Yes," Hope answered, and for an awkward moment, there was silence on both ends.
"Are you sure you're okay?"
he asked. She could almost see his frown.
"You seem quiet."
"I told you I'm fine."
"It seems like you're still angry with me."
"What do you think?" She fought to keep her irritation under control.
"Don't you think you might be overreacting?"
"I'd rather not talk about it on the phone," she said.
"Why not?"
"Because this is something we should do face to face."
"I don't know why you're acting like this," he said.
"Then maybe you don't know me at all."
"Oh, come on, don't be so melodramatic." She could hear the ice clink in his glass as he took a drink. I think I should go, she said, cutting him off. Bye. She could hear Josh continuing to argue even as she hung up the receiver. Hope stared at the phone for a moment before letting her hand fall to her side. I'm sorry about that, she told True, sighing. I probably shouldn't have answered in the first place. Do you want to talk about it? No. On the radio, one song ended, and another began. The music was plaintive, restless, and she watched as True rose from the table. He was so very close now. She could feel her back pressing against the wall as he stared at her. She met his gaze without wavering. He moved even closer. She knew what was happening. No words were needed. She thought again that none of this could be real. But as his body pressed up against hers, it suddenly felt more real than anything she'd ever known. She could still stop this. Maybe she should stop it. In a few days, he'd be half a world away, and the physical and emotional bond between them was destined to be broken. He would be hurt, and she would be hurt. And yet, she couldn't stop herself. Not anymore. Rain sheeted against the windows, and the clouds continued to flicker. True slipped his arm around her back, his eyes